Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Thanks for tuning in each and every Saturday morning and telling your friends and your family. And speaking of family, at 8:15, my guest is going to be the great Teo Alfaro, who wrote a book called The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human. What a great idea to be able to use the behavior of wolves as a pack for us to better learn about our own lives as human beings. Can't wait to talk to him at 8:15, but it made me think all week. You know, I love the world of art, the world of sports, the world of surgery, that they all have a commonality. You just gotta find how to connect the dots. So where in the world of art, the world of sports, the world of surgery, do we see that bond of family when it goes right and when it goes wrong? The whole idea of sibling and rivalries. Don't miss the HBO special on right now about the Bee Gees, the Brothers Gibb. Whether you like Saturday Night Fever or not, their story about brothers hating each other, loving each other, hating each other, back and forth, it's fascinating. But it happens all the time. It's the greatest strength and it's the greatest weakness. Noel Gallagher was interviewed for the HBO special and he said something, I wrote it down. He said, when brothers sing, it's like an instrument no one else has. Something special about the way those Bee Gees harmonized. Well, in the sports world, brothers harmonizing, who first start fighting with each other, but then harmonize, is in the NFL right now, playing D-line for the San Diego Chargers, number 97, 6'4", 270 pounds of solid muscle, is the great Joey Bosa. Well, he's got a little brother named Nick Bosa, who was Defensive Player of the Year rookie for the San Francisco 49ers. Nick Bosa, can you imagine? And their dad, John Bosa, also number 97, also 6'4", 270 pounds, played from 1987 to 89 for the Miami Dolphins. All three of these guys were number one picks in the NFL draft. But to listen to the story of these two brothers growing up, wanting to kill each other, the older brother 3 years older than the little brother, but listen to when their mom talks about the turning point when they learn to truly nurture for each other and not fight anymore. It's when they were both on the same team in high school. Joey was a senior, Nick was a freshman, and that flipped the switch in their relationship. The sibling rivalry became a nurturing one. It went from a weakness to a strength in a moment. Let's listen in sports to sibling rivalry. We can talk about the Manning brothers, Eli and Peyton, and their dad, Archie. But I just love this story about the Bosa brothers. Steve Paulette, let's go to number one.
I guess it was, you know, competitive, and if they were playing, it always ended up in, you know, some type of a, you know, scuffle or whatever.
A lot of tussling, and Joe's a bit of a bully. He bullied his little brother until a certain age.
Joey used to call him a mama's boy, and Nick used to look at him and go, yeah, that's right, I am. I'm a mama's boy.
She's just the best mom you could ever ask for. She's at every practice, at every game. Just from day one, she's been the best, and I love her.
Here's my favorite soundbite where Cheryl, their mom, says there was a turning point when they were both on the same team and had to root for each other. Their whole relationship changed in an instant. Number two.
Joey was a senior in high school and Nick was a freshman, and they started on St. Thomas together.
Which was the only year that they all ever played together, because Nick became a starter as a freshman. And Joey, of course, was a senior and one of the best, you know, high school players in the country.
And that was really a kind of a difference maker year, where they finally played on the same team and won a state championship.
It just was this turning point in their relationship where they went from, you know, Nick being the annoying little brother relationship to them being best friends. It was like night and day. It was like flipping a switch.
Listen to the coach at Ohio State. Joey Bosa went to Ohio State. Guess who also wants to go to Ohio State to follow in his brother's footsteps? Nick Bosa. So the man who coached them both was Larry Johnson, is Larry Johnson at Ohio State. He's the best D-line coach in the country in college. Listen to him talk about working and teaching these two siblings. Number three.
Well, I think both have great sense of humor. They're great people. You know, they're great to coach. They want to be great. And that makes my job much easier as a coach, because the guys that are willing to come to work, they're like sponges. So they want everything you can get them to make them great.
Number four.
They're very similar that way. They both really want to be great players, and they want to achieve the highest level they can possibly go in the NFL. And the younger brother, Nick, is chasing that same dream on his own pace. He realized that he's got a great older brother. He wants to be better. Well, this is his driving force. From the day he walked in the building, you know, he wanted to break every record that Joey had, because that's what he was chasing.
Number five.
That's sort of, you know, the way Nick knows is following Joe, and now he's following Joe into the league. I think it's been nothing but positive, and Joe's been a wonderful big brother, you know, really teaching him from when Nick was in high school and Joe was teaching him, you know, college-type football moves. That's why Nick might have gotten a little bit more advanced at a younger age, because he had Joe teaching him.
And number six.
That's where it started. So I go down and spend 4 or 5 hours all day with Nick, half a day, teaching them our skill set, teaching them pass rush, teaching them flip a set. And it's the first time he got a piece of that. And then his high school coach came up and spent 2 days with me to take some things back, to continue the process. So that's where it really started. And when he come up, we were all have a chance to sit down and talk ball and show videotape. And his skill set just trying to continue enhancing. So he got it much earlier than Joey got it, the sense of what we do here and how we rush the passer.
Here's John Bosa, the dad, talking about that sibling rivalry. Number seven.
Whenever we would come up here to see Joe, Nick would spend an hour in the D-line room with Coach Johnson, you know, watching tape, watching cut-ups of Joe's practices, with learning technique, talking about technique. And so now you have Nick, who's in high school, who's learning from the best D-line coach. So he's going to have a little bit of an advantage, and not to mention Joey continually, you know, updating him on things that they were doing. So Nick was getting some really good coaching early.
And Nick really appreciates his dad. So does Joey. Number 11.
Nick has made the most of his football career to start, and of this week in South Florida. He's a defensive star, but he also knows that while his dad had his promising career cut short by injuries, his father's impact was huge on his football path.
Growing up and having a dad who's so into just watching me and being a part of my career, he's been awesome. He's been the best dad I could have ever asked for, so I love him.
And the dad thinks it would be great to have the Chargers play the 49ers in the Super Bowl so he can have both his sons on the field at the same time. And then he realizes, oh, my God, who am I going to root for? Maybe I should just have them one at a time in the Super Bowl. And last year, Nick was in the Super Bowl as a rookie. Can you imagine? But the father was set straight. Maybe I don't want them both at the same time on the field. Number 12.
And now comes the ultimate chance for Nick, and really for the entire Bosa family. But John has backed off a bit from his original dream of seeing both of his sons play in the same Super Bowl.
I thought that would be a wonderful thing, but the more I thought about it.
That's kind of, I mean, yeah, how like, do you pick a side?
Exactly. So actually, they can take turns. They can take turns reaching. That was a stupid idea.
Yeah, hopefully they each get multiple opportunities, win one, but not against each other, because that's too tough on a dad.
Exactly.
Especially if you're already a wreck. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, no, I don't know what I was thinking. Thanks for straightening me out.
Good stuff.
And Joey Bosa loved nurturing his little brother, and loves to this day. But in in the music world, the art world, that sibling rivalry. For me, it's Sly and the Family Stone. Sly Stone's older brother, Freddie. Let's listen to how sibling rivalry, strength and weaknesses in the music and art world. Let's go to number two.
I just remember the studio, and I remember I just enjoyed singing in the choir. And I remember I was the youngest in the area, and I remember I wanted to be a preacher or something at the time.
But Sly didn't become a preacher. Instead, he joined a group formed by his brother Freddie, the first of many family acts that Sly would be in.
And later, he actually creates his own band. But he's told by his dad, if you do that, you better make sure you bring your siblings into it. Number seven.
Jerry Martini is the guy that really started it. This guy, he plays saxophone in the group now. And he came to the radio station and decided that Sly, you ought to be the leader of this group. And I was doing fine at the radio station, I thought. So we started looking around for everybody other than my sisters and my brother, because they were automatically in if I was in, because Daddy said so.
And that pressure to keep his family in it, it's a beautiful thing, his dad insisted, but it also doesn't work so well if the talent is not the same. Sly Stone is a prodigy. Sly Stone was Prince before there was Prince. The number of records, well, just listen. Listen to when there's the strength in the sibling rivalry and then the weakness. Number eight.
Sly Stone was in the top of the music scene for 10 years. He had 8 gold records, toured the world several times, caused mob scenes wherever he went, sold out concerts, and packed Madison Square Garden for his wedding. During his reign at the top, Sly's genius influenced many musicians and produced hundreds of songs, including hits like Stand, I Wanna Take You Higher, Hot Fun in the Summertime, Everyday People, and more. But for the past few years, amid speculation and rumors about his private life and non-appearances for his concerts, Sly has become less than a household word. What happened?
Number nine.
Some people have asked, whatever happened to Sly Stone? Well, whatever happened to Sly Stone?
I would say the same thing if I heard and saw a person a lot on the radio and saw them on television a lot, and then I didn't see them all of a sudden. If, you know, somebody that I liked. And I think that is the basic reason, because it's nice to be missed, and it makes you feel like you're on the right track. If somebody says, well, where is Sly? I've been relaxing.
You mean you've sort of been on a break?
Yes.
Self-imposed?
Yes.
The pressure just got to him to make everybody happy. When the difference in talent is so great, the pressure is on you, the little brother, to take care of everybody. That's difficult. This is, by the way, is from an interview from 1976. So it was not a very long run, but what a fruitful run it was. Every single record seemed to be a hit that he created. Number 10.
Being a superstar, is there a certain kind of pressure that goes along with it?
The only way it crosses my mind is because I want to do it right, you know. That's all. So the only bother is the bother that I put on myself, you know, to make sure I must do this, I must do this, I must do this, you know. And I surely need that also.
Do you like being a superstar?
Well, I like being who I am.
Unlike the Jackson 5, Sly playing with his brothers, but also his sisters. This inspired him to realize you can have men and women, young and old. And that idea of making it the whole family really added to his draw. And he really broke ground that nobody else could break. Number 11.
You were one of the first black musicians to have a wide range of audience. A lot of white people followed your music and bought your music. Why do you suppose your music did that?
I think it has to do with songs that involve everybody and a message that involves everybody. Everybody wants to be happy, and the songs that we do are songs that I feel should make everybody happy. You know, and I think that's basically it.
You want to make people feel good with your music?
Yes.
So you have up music, would you say?
I'd say so.
He made music to make all of us happy, but couldn't make himself happy. And that is just so wrong. But it's the reality. When the sibling rivalry is strong, magic occurs. But it can also be a weakness. It can also be difficult. And when it doesn't go right, we can learn from others. Sometimes it's another human being. And sometimes it's from paying attention to the animal world. How do wolves behave in a wolf pack? Sibling rivalry as a strength and as a weakness. Those wolves may want to bite each other when they're alone together, but when they go hunting, they need each other to eat. They all got to work together. That's something we can all learn from, and we'll get into it. My guest coming up next, the great Teo Alfaro, who knows a lot about the wolf connection with human beings. We'll be talking to him. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Miss an interview or Doc's weekly story? Check it out on the Weekend Warrior Facebook page. Also, Doc's advice to callers on their aches and pains. Just type Weekend Warrior in the Facebook search bar and you'll see Doc's picture in the listings. And thanks for checking out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Dr. Clapper makes lives better in surgery.
Damn
and
right.
Also helps out his feathered friends. Recently, a poor stranded webbling fellow lost his way in the Big Cedars parking lot, like most of us. The scared bird soon comes across our Clapper Vision surgeon after the typical Dr. Clapper questions.
How young are you? What do you do for a living? Where did you grow up? What did your father do for a living?
Doc does a quick examination of our little chickadee, writes a prescription for some pool therapy, and personally Ubers our duckling patient to a nearby pond for a quackling feathered family get-together. Doing something nice for someone.
Dr. Clapper.
Brought to you by the Weekend Warrior Facebook page, Cedar Sinai, and Dr. Clapper.
This is Keyshawn in the Morning. My man, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warrior Show starts your Saturday morning. Join the Doc from 7 to 9 a.m.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Google the Guggenheim.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm so excited to talk to my guest. He knows a lot about relationships. He's an expert, and he has a gift of bringing the animal world to the human world in rehabilitation. Fascinating subject. The great Teo Alfaro. It's Teo, right? Not Teo. Teo.
Yes, Teo.
Teo, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Clapper, for having me.
It's really our pleasure. The book you wrote is called The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human. I want to play a soundbite, if you don't mind, and I'd love to get your reaction to it. Let's play from the sports world, number two. This is about two football players.
Joey was a senior in high school and Nick was a freshman, and they started on St. Thomas together.
Which was the only year that they all ever played together, because Nick became a starter as a freshman. And Joey, of course, was a senior and one of the best, you know, high school players in the country.
And that was really a kind of a difference maker year, where they finally played on the same team and won a state championship.
it just was this turning point in their relationship where they went from, you know, Nick being the annoying little brother relationship to them being best friends. It was like night and day. It was like flipping a switch.
Flipping a switch in a relationship is what your life is really all about, Teo, correct? And you're trying to use the wolf to teach us. Before we get started, tell us how this all gets started. Who are you? Where'd you grow up? What'd your dad do for a living? And how wolves entered your lives?
Thank you for the question. Well, you introduced me as a relationship expert. You should talk to my wife first.
I get it.
So to answer your question, I grew up in Argentina. My father was a businessman, a textile factory owner. So typical suburb, Italian immigrants in South America. And I was a little bit of an oddball out, always adventure. I mean, still my entire family, my sister, my cousin, they all live within walking distance from each other in the same suburb they were born in. I was always the adventurer. So I went to the military. Then I became a professional mountaineer in Patagonia. And then I came to the States following the studies of a spiritual teacher. And, you know, one thing led to the next. And that both captivated me. And here I am almost 25 years later.
How did you meet a wolf? How did that come into your life?
Well, a crazy story. I mean, it's a sequence of odd stories. At one point, I was traveling and lecturing internationally, and a friend of mine sends me a text message saying, "I have some wolf puppies in my trunk. Do you want to meet them?" Sure. Turns out he was dating some woman that was backyard breeding some wolves, and he was trying to. My friend, Jack of many trades, trying to sell the puppies, whole story. And then brings this puppy to me that you know, I'm busy, I'm working too much, I'm traveling, I don't have time for a pet. And this puppy, you know, long story short, picked me. I mean, you know, could not leave me alone, this particular one. And after rejecting and saying no to the rescue or the adoption a couple of times, eventually I gave in. And this little puppy, her name was Tala, she changed my life. I mean, you know, all of a sudden, pee-poo and hair dog, you know, wolf hair all over the house was not an issue. And looking for a playmate for her, I found 16 wolves and wolf dogs from a hoarder facility that needed help. And my heart went out. I wanted to help and volunteer. And within a couple of months of helping those animals, on a complete whim, I decided to take them all, rent a piece of land in the backcountry, and start a wolf sanctuary completely out of the blue.
Oh my God! So the turning point that you heard the soundbite of two brothers fighting constantly growing up, and then going onto the same team. The mother says one was a senior, one was a freshman. All of a sudden, they needed each other because they were on the same team. It became a nurturing relationship versus a bitter relationship. How does that mend in your life in terms of what you see, where people have bitterness about life, about themselves, and achieve a turning point? Does that make sense to you when they are convinced that now they need each other? What's your interpretation of that story?
Well, my interpretation is that these two brothers that in that segment that you played are the lucky ones, the exception. The majority of the youth that I work with often don't get to the turning point and spend their lives as a young person and even as an adult struggling with life circumstances. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a number of situations that contribute to that turning point. One sometimes is, you know, parenting is difficult, it's complicated, there's no manual for it. But some parents do one or two things right that eventually helps the kids push forward. Sometimes, mm-hmm. I mean, in this case, these two brothers that you referred to were involved in sports. Maybe they had a good coach. Maybe they had enough drive in themselves, enough desire to succeed, that put aside the rivalry. Now, compared to the animal world, for wolves, this rivalry is ritualistic. So siblings will challenge each other, never hurt each other, but challenge each other. There will be growls, there will be races, there will be physical shoving each other and such as a way to instill this predatorial competition that they have. And if things are done right, the older sibling will be part of the initiation process into the pack, part of the ritualistic rite of passage. Now, I'm going to make an interesting, I'm going to meander in a comparison for you real quick, but then it will make a lot of sense for your listeners. You know how, some people have dogs. I mean, how sometimes your dog will walk in a circle in your tile floor in the kitchen before laying down. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that behavior?
Yes.
Yeah. Or they will go, pee on a post on the cement floor, but they still scratch the cement floor. Those are leftover instincts that dogs have from the time they were wolves. I mean, that really what a wolf does when they go in a circle, they are pushing down the tall grass to make a bedding. So they push it down and then they lay down. When they pee on a tree and then they scratch, what they're doing is they're transferring the scent that they have in the scent glands on their paws to leave their mark both on the tree and on the ground. Now, the dog, tens of thousands of years later, has a leftover of a confused instinct that they did that they don't know what it is for, but they still do it in your tile floor in your kitchen. The same happened to humans. We humans have some leftover instincts from the time we were more connected to Earth, more linked to each other, more in balance with nature. We had this natural initiation process, these natural behaviors, and today brothers will compete in almost a confused way. That's why sometimes they actually do hurt each other. Sometimes the competition is unhealthy.
This is the Bee Gees. You need to watch this and you'll see the unhealthy. It ultimately became healthy, but it was unhealthy for a while. Exactly what you're talking about. I got to ask you a question. Have you ever been to the La Brea Tar Pits?
One of my favorite places in L.A.
Because there is a wall in that museum of 430 dire wolf skulls. And I remember going to that museum for the first time and looking at 430 wolf skulls, which the museum thought was cool just to show you how many had died in the tar pit. And as an orthopedic surgeon, I'm looking at that wall going, they all think they're exactly the same, but every one of them is slightly different if you know what you're looking at. So it's really, we can learn a lot from studying wolves. Can you stay on for another segment, Teo? I got to ask you a question. Do you have time?
Absolutely. We're better.
Okay. We're talking to the great Teo Alfaro, who wrote a book called The Wolf Connection and has spent the last 20 plus years of his life helping human beings by letting them learn how the wolf gets along. It's a fascinating area of work, and he's a trailblazer in it. We'll get into more questions with him coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Out the Weekend Warrior Facebook Know Your Knee Posts. One of the most complicated areas of the body. ACL, PCL, MCL, patella subluxation.
Really?
Dr. Clapper translates the language of your knee.
Dr. Clapper.
On the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Whoa.
Simply type in Weekend Warrior in the search bar and click on Doc's picture. Wow! Your knee feels better already.
Damn right.
Like, follow, and feel better.
Hello there.
With the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedar Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
He's infectious, and I can say that because I'm a doctor.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Roberto Clapperio.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. We're talking about sibling rivalries, the strength and the weaknesses. In the human world, Sly and the Family Stone in art and music, and the Bosa brothers in the world of sports. I'm talking to the great Teo Alfaro, who uses the wolf pack and how wolves relate to each other as rehabilitation for people who are at risk. Teo, talk to me about taking care of a kid with addiction, domestic violence. It's just such a pleasure to talk to someone like you, who found a calling in life that surprised you as much as anybody else that this is your calling, but you discover this and you're able to take it forward and help total strangers. It's just a beautiful story. Take us through an example where, just like the Bosa brothers' mom describes a turning point that these boys had, take us through a specific case where you witnessed the wolf pack teaching an at-risk kid and change their life. Was a turning point for them?
Well, thank you for asking that. The cases are endless. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind is this young woman, age 16. When she came to us, she was suicidal. It was one of the worst cases we've ever got. She was suicidal. She had some toxic relationship with food and so on. And the reason was her father was prostituting her for drugs and other things. So she was passing her around, basically, to friends and clients. And that really damaged her in many ways. And so she was at the end of the rope when she came to us. Unmotivated, guarded, mistrusting. And she very soon developed a bond with two wolves we had just rescued at the time that were also mistreated. And one of the ways was they were overfed. So when they came to us, these two wolves were weighed, their weight was about double what they should weigh. They were over 200 mm-hmm. pounds for their size. They should have been 90 pounds or so. So this young lady was also a bit overweight and round. And so she connected with that mistreatment, and she began to take ownership in the care of those animals. So from this self-reflection and this sense of hopelessness, she found hope and a path forward through caring for those animals that were also mistreated. Long story short, this process allowed her to begin to release some of her trauma through hiking with this animal. The experience here is very primal, if you might. So we do some talking, but we don't do a lot of talking. We let both the youth and the wolves do their magic the way the primitive man and the ancient wolf used to do their magic. You mentioned those wolves at La Brea Tar Pits. Those dire wolves were already in relationship with early humans in this area that we live in. Mm-hmm. So this young woman was able to actually complete our program, which is a very demanding 8 weeks. And she went on to eventually graduate high school. She was not suicidal any longer. And right on the heels of graduating high school, she came back. She became a volunteer with us and went to nursing school and began a psychological rehab process to forgive her father and move on with her life. So the transformation was a 360 from the time she started to where she's today. I mean, today she's a nurse and, living a life of service.
Teo, when I listen to you speak, The greatest thing I can feel in my heart is that English is not your first language. Whether it's Spanish from Argentina, whether it's Italian from your heritage, but the fact that you have an accent the way you do is the greatest thing for me to hear, because what it immediately tells the listener, me, is that what you are doing goes beyond communicating with the spoken word. Your accent immediately tells me he has a power that goes beyond English and speaking. And I just think it's terrific that whatever words you're using, you're actually conveying something that's deeper and it's powerful. So I just enjoy listening to you try to describe these events with your beautiful accent, to be honest with you, because it makes what you're doing that much more powerful. It's almost like you're speaking wolf. You know what I mean? You're speaking a language that is deeper than English. So it's just terrific. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to, other than getting people to get the book, how else can we help you do what you do?
Well, thanks for asking. And I really, I'm really moved by what you said about my accent. It's always been you know, I feel a bit sometimes insecure about my accent, especially when I do, you know, talk interviews like this one. Hopefully your listeners will get to understand the message behind the accent.
They do. They do. It's an asset, Teo. It's not a liability.
Well, you just said words that I say to the youth here. You know, their pain, their trauma is an asset that can lead to strength and to resilience in life. Is not a handicap. Many times they feel broken, they feel less than, and their life journey is definitely their asset. So thank you for reflecting the words that I speak often.
Mm. So is there a website? Where can we get a hold of you, Teo?
Sure. I mean, Wolf Connection is a nonprofit organization here outside Los Angeles. We have a ranch with 35 wolves, a big pack, that do the, you know, this angel work with youth from foster care, gang members, drug addiction, lifers, veterans, you know, combat veterans. So wolfconnection.org is the website. We exist and thrive thanks to the generosity of the general public and foundations and so forth that allow us to continue serving this way, continue rescuing wolves nationally. I want to clarify that because sometimes people think we have wolves in captivity. These wolves is a double-purpose organization. These wolves come from illegal ownership and fur farms, you know, where they're raised for the pelt all across the country. So we rescue these animals. We give them a lifetime care here at the ranch. They get rehabilitated, and then they become ambassadors for humans.
You're a beautiful person, Teo. It's an honor. God put us together for a reason. I can't thank you enough for joining us, and we'll keep what's happening here on our Facebook page and let everybody know what you're up to. Thanks so much for joining us. You really made my day.
I'm honored, Dr. Clapper. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. The great Teo Alfaro. All right, Warriors, coming up next, the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Get smart.
Just what are you getting at?
Check out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Like this.
Medical advice from Cedars-Sinai, head of orthopedic surgery.
Are you kidding?
With a Far Rockaway attitude and a little drizzle of mozzarella.
Well, it's important to me.
Search Weekend Warrior in the space bar.
Like this.
And click on Doc's picture.
I see.
Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Hey, it's Mace. You know, there is no better way to start your Saturday than with Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior Show, 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
At 42 years old, you know what your new nickname is for me?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
You're not Matthew from Santa Monica anymore. You're Mr. Preop.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers. Lost in a cloud.
Weekend Warriors. I'm hungry like a wolf right now after talking to Teo Alfaro about the Wolf Connection. What a great guest. Truly doing God's work. All right, let's open the clinic. Let's do some clapper vision. Let's go to Dan in Ontario. Thanks for hanging on the line so long. You're terrific, Dan. I would have hung up a long time ago.
No, listen, it's very interesting what you're talking about, because I was raised on a farm in Nebraska.
Wow.
And I milked cows for 10 years. And
jeez.
So the grip on my hands are really quite strong because mm-hmm. of that. And so when you get my age at 78 and you open a pickle jar, you can do that, et cetera. Well, about a week ago, I did that, and I didn't know that I didn't feel anything. But now my thumb, my right thumb, when I bend the knuckle
yes.
next to the thumbnail, it feels yes. like it's going over, it kind of snaps
yep.
up and down. And
you've got a trigger thumb. You got a trigger thumb. At Cedars, we call it altacocceritis because you're in your late 70s. But I got to ask you, because I know a very important listener is Donna Aiello, who's from Nebraska. So what little town in Nebraska are you from?
Bellwood.
Bellwood. All right. I got to ask Donna.
7 miles south, 7 miles east of Columbus.
Okay. I'm going to ask her about Bellwood, Nebraska.
It's about 60 miles from Lincoln and about 80 miles from Omaha.
And if you ever play golf, you need to go to the Rancho Park Golf Course, a public course. And the starter, his name is Hop. He's from a small town in Nebraska, probably 2 miles away from Bellwood. So you need to go visit Hop at the Rancho Park Golf Course when it opens again. All right.
Okay.
A trigger thumb. So you listen to the show. You know what clapper vision is?
Yes, I do.
All right. A clapper vision is... you've got a pair of pants on right now, and it is a pair of Levi's jeans, and you've got a leather belt because you need help holding your pants up. Some guys at 78, like my dad, started wearing suspenders. I hope that's not something that's in my future, but it may be. But I prefer to wear a belt. And a belt...
I've done both.
Okay, so the belt has the principle... that in order to not just a rope around your pants, because then the pants would fall through and the rope would be still around your waist. So what keeps the belt attached to the pants? The belt loops.
Yeah.
So you basically put the belt through the belt loops and then you buckle it and you keep your pants from falling down. If here's the clapper vision, the tendon in your thumb, that snap and that catch that you're feeling, the tendon is the leather belt. The loop that holds the leather belt to the pants, you have loops, believe it or not, around the tendon, just like around the belt, that wrap in the front portion of the bone in the palm of your hand. They're called pulleys. Well, imagine your belt, the leather belt, you soaked it in water and it started to swell and it got fatter, too fat for the belt loop. The belt loop can't expand. The leather belt has gotten thicker because it's soaking wet in water and expands. And now it's not so easy to pull the belt through the belt loops. That's called a trigger finger. Your swelling in your tendon is now getting stuck. So my approach is three things for you. Number one, you can take a couple of Advil with food. Don't take them on an empty stomach. And for 2 days straight, every 4 to 6 hours, you take a couple of Advil to see if the oral medication can take down some of the swelling in the tendon as a way of getting it to glide without snapping. Just 2 days. I don't need you to do it forever. But take it pretty much regularly for every 4 to 6 hours with food to get enough good blood levels of the anti-inflammatory to see if that'll help. That's option number one. Option number two, I hate cortisone shots, but if ever there was a need, and I'm not talking two or three, I would do one where you can actually put the medicine between the pulley and the tendon, and you need someone who knows what they're doing, which is someone who's a hand surgeon. not just a regular orthopedic surgeon or a regular doctor. You need someone who's going to put the medicine in the right spot. And I'll give you the name of a couple of hand surgeons right now. You can go to David Culber, K-U-L-B-E-R. He's at Cedars. Or you can go to Eugene Tsai, T-S-A-I. He's also at Cedars. These are two terrific hand surgeons, and let them give you a shot. If the shot fails or works only temporarily, then very elegantly, under anesthesia, local anesthesia, you don't have to go to the hospital for this, you can inject the skin and you can actually release that pulley. So option one, oral medication. Option two, an injection. Option three, a shot. Most people don't need the shot or the surgery. You can get away with the oral medication, and this too shall pass. Does that help, Dan?
Sure does.
All right, I want you to do me a favor. You're a total stranger. I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I'm going to do a pay before drive-through.
There you go. And maybe get a hold of the Wolf Connection. Go online, wolfconnection.org. Give them some money so they can keep doing the beautiful work they're doing. God bless you, Dan. Thanks so much for listening.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Goodbye. Good day. Let's do one more call. Who do we got? Let's go to Joe. Thanks, Steve Paulette. Let's go to Joe. You're on with Dr. Clapper. I've got a few minutes left. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Clapper, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. How young are you? What do you do for a living, Joe?
I'm 47 years old, sir, and I work for Metro. I drive a bus.
Oh, wow. Good for you. I love that. Let me tell you a Metro bus story. I love engines. I love how cars work. When I was a kid, I built a visible V8 engine, you know, which was really difficult for a Jewish guy because we don't know anything about engines. But when I took care of a patient who was a diesel mechanic in Barstow, love this guy, Butch is his name. He brought me a gift because he knew I loved engines because he's a mechanic, of a giant piston from a locomotive. This thing was enormous. I put it in my one of my exam rooms. And a month later, an MTA bus mechanic walks in for, I think it was his knee that was bad. He looks in the room. He goes, Dr. Clapper, why do you have a giant piston in this room? I said, because I love engines. He goes, I'm a mechanic for the MTA buses. You know, if you like pistons, I'll get you a piston from an MTA bus. So I said, that'll be great. He shows up the next week with a piston from an MTA bus and put it on the counter. Needless to say, every time I see a patient who's a mechanic, they look at this collection of pistons. I now have 20 different pistons from motorcycles, motorboats, all kinds of engines. I have the greatest piston collection. So it's a pleasure to talk to you. How can I help you? What's up?
Well, sir, I started developing a pain in my, like a burning sensation on my forearm where my elbow is.
Yes.
I've been to the doctors already, and they did an MRI. They said they found a small tear in my forearm, in my bicep, and in my elbow. They just think it's either cartilage or it just some major inflammation. Now,
okay.
I did a little bit of therapy about, I say, 10 visits, and I did about 10 acupuncture visits. Now they want to give me a shot, and I know how you feel about cortisone shots, but this doctor said it's not a cortisone shot. It's something else called, I think it's called like Kellogg shot or something like that.
Yeah, that's steroids. Camelog is steroids. Don't let them do that. Please don't. You know, you got the MRI, you got the X-ray. It's time for you to really have an evaluation. If it's a partial tear, usually it doesn't need surgery. But if this is a combination of a partial tear as well as arthritis, because you've been so physical and so strong with your arms all this time, then it's time for you to see someone that I respect, someone who can at least give you a good opinion for your elbow. There's a guy at Cedars that I love named Dr. Michael Stone. He's been a guest on the show. I don't want him giving you any cortisone shots either, but go see what he says. I would trust his opinion. And after you see him, if you still have questions, I'd love you to call me and let me know, because that I will be happy to help. But that's where you're going next. Michael Stone at Cedars. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, do you just recommend I continue on doing the therapy?
Yes. Yes. And if you start to feel bad, the other thing I'd love you to do is for $10, buy yourself a neoprene sleeve. You can buy them at Big Five, but nowadays you shouldn't go anywhere. Get it online. Don't spend a lot of money. You don't need a hinge. But just a beautiful, and you don't need copper or any of the other nonsense that they sell. just a simple sleeve made of neoprene, the same stuff the wetsuit's made of. You can go online and buy one. If you wear that during the day, that more than anything else is going to help you, more than acupuncture, more than the therapy, to calm down some of the inflammation. You may have to wear that sleeve for a couple of months, but that'll help you more than anything else.
Great. I appreciate your professionalism. I'm a fellow East Coast guy from North New Jersey.
Oh, I love it. Well, thanks so much for listening. The reason I get up is to be able to meet people like you. I really appreciate it.
I for 6 o'clock this morning, I said I got to make sure I'm on with them today. So I thank you. God bless.
Thank you so much, sir. All right. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me. All right, Warriors, where is the best breakfast burrito that I've ever had? They don't just put eggs and the chorizo sausage. They put cheese. They put beans. They put rice. And it's warm and melts all together in this flour tortilla. They wrap it in aluminum foil. I practically ate the aluminum foil and the bag they put it in. That's how great it smells. But the reason I'm mentioning it is because it was not overtly spicy or salty, which usually is the case with chorizo. My mouth is watering already. I can't even speak. And after surfing on Wednesday, freezing cold, I got out of the water and I drove to Corrales, the Corrales Mexican restaurant in Ventura. Oh my God, their breakfast burrito is the best that I've ever had. Treat yourself. Drive all the way up. And while you're there, don't forget to go to Good Time Donuts and say hi to Sue. When you walk in, ask for Sue. Tell him, I want a donut that Dr. Clapper eats.
Hell yeah.
And she'll hook you up with my favorite donut. Good Time Donuts in Ventura, Corrales Mexican. You got your whole day planned now in terms of what to eat. Next week's going to be interesting. We're going to get a hold of Maurice Jones-Drew. He's fascinating to me. He's a football player. He's now the analyst for the Rams. You'll hear him on this station every Rams game. But Maurice Jones-Drew fascinates me because I remember when he played at UCLA and he was interviewed and said his gifts as a running back was because his grandma told him to take ballet lessons. I can't wait to talk to him next week, Maurice Jones-Drew. Until then, I'll see you on the radio. Nel cielo infinito volare, oh, cantare.
Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Didn't you get the memo?
Quickly hear Clapper's crazy kitchen stories. Easily find different callers' aches and pain issues.
Right, I get it.
Search Weekend Warrior in the search bar and click on Doc's picture.
Who are you again?
Voila! Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.